Columbus, Madison's home for real news and great conversation. A Civic Media Station.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. This march in Washington today, part of a nationwide No Kings protests, another one in Times Square in New York, ABC's Andrew Dimbert.
And this goes for blocks and blocks and blocks, seas of people. As for the protest itself, we have seen that it is peaceful. Demonstrators have stopped here and there to give speeches, chant, that sort of thing, but it has been rather disruptive, but peaceful.
On day 18 of the government shutdown, businesses in the nation's capital are hurting. Khalid Pitts co-owns Cork Wine Bar and Market.
That's less people in the seats in my restaurant and less people in the streets of Washington, D.C. going out.
Evacuation in southwest Alaska after a hurricane-force storm washed away towns. Not long after, the Palestinian embassy in Egypt today announced that the Rafah crossing between Gaza and Egypt will reopen Monday so Gazans can return home. Israeli Prime Minister's office says it will not be opened. This is ABC News. Another U.S. attack in the Caribbean on what the Trump administration says was a boatload of illegal drugs. ABC's Christian Cordero.
The most recent strike was the first to target a semi-submersible, which the Coast Guard has often chased down as suspected drug boats. It was also the first strike to leave survivors. At least two survivors are now in custody aboard a U.S. vessel. The administration hasn't yet shared what exactly they plan to do with them.
Venezuela denies it is helping any drug smugglers. Iranian-backed Houthi rebels today raided a U.N. facility in Yemen's capital Sana, according to a U.N. official, adding that all staff were reported to be safe. Action over a snafu with the eyes of cars. ABC's Dave Packer.
Ford recalling more than 290,000 vehicles in the U.S. because the rear-view camera system may not display images properly in certain conditions. The recall covers certain 2020 through 2022 F-Series trucks.
Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
The John and Gordy Show.
Charles Atlas. Wasn't that on the back of the comic books?
Yeah, it was always on the back of the comics, yeah.
Yeah.
Is it Atlas, the guy who got sand kicked in his face and he worked out and started beating up all the other strong men on the beach? And, you know, at the time, there weren't a lot of people that were in that kind of shape. Guys didn't have six packs back then. I think they were proud just to have a kind of a smooth stomach.
Weekday mornings, 6 till 8 on 92.7 WMDX and the Civic Media app. The Todd Allbaugh Show.
The incomparable Jane Mattner.
I have been in radio for 44 years.
It's incredible.
I wanted to be an actress originally. Radio to me was mind theater. Mm-hmm. I could be anybody.
Yeah.
And people could imagine it. It's like reading a book instead of the movie. Is your mind gets to fill in lots of details. And I think that's part of the genuine experience of radio.
The Todd Allbaugh Show. Weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station. And on the app.
Mad City. Biking through blizzards since forever. 92.7 WMDX.
For Civic Media News, I'm Sholly Pittman. As the climate shifts, so does the science behind growing cranberries. Reporter Melissa Kay has more.
Staff at the Wisconsin Cranberry Research Station are working to ensure the future of the state's signature fruit by studying how cranberries can tolerate extreme temperatures and finding ways to extend the harvest season to reduce labor and equipment demands.
The inability to change in a changing environment is the textbook definition of extinction.
That's Grant Hawley, the executive director of the nonprofit Wisconsin Cranberry Growers Association. He said Wisconsin growers know what to do when change happens slowly.
When you're looking at fast changes, you need to know the whys. And that's where our researchers come into play.
They're able to look at changes happening at a molecular level and see how the cranberries are being affected and also the symbiotic relationship that plants have with other organisms in the ground.
They're seeing how that bacteria inside of the soil is helping with nitrogen uptake. They're making sure that the fungus in the ground is helping us with water uptake.
Gabby Myers is the Research and Education Manager for the Wisconsin Cranberry Research and Education Foundation. She coordinates efforts from researchers across the state.
They're trying to create better cranberries, so maybe they're sweeter, firmer. So all different sorts of traits that they're trying to breed for, we provide a space for them to have those plots established.
Hybrid cranberry varieties are helping farmers diversify their marshes, producing more fruit on less land, and spreading out the harvest season.
They're trying to be able to make it to where harvest doesn't all happen in the same 2 weeks, because that's where you need extra equipment, you need extra people. It's just a terrible time if you have to do that.
Harvest season now starts as early as September and can run through October or later, depending on the year.
Reporter Melissa Kay. For Civic Media News, I'm Sholly Pittman. More news anytime at civicmedia.us.
You're listening to 92.7 WMDX, Madison's home for the Maggie Dawn Show, Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, sunshine and highs in the low to mid-70s. Rain is likely tonight, a low around 46. Sunday, windy with a high around 59. Northwest winds gust to 30 miles per hour. On Monday, partly sunny and a high around 66.
Right now, 71 degrees.
Maggie Dawn.
I'm joined by my special guest, Tom Paulsiewicz. We dive into Donald Trump's plan to dispatch the IRS against his enemies and Magic Mike's refusal to seat the newest elected congresswoman. Don't miss it.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
92.7 WMDX, fueled by coffee, driven by curiosity.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome to the show. I am Mark Becker here on the Civic Media Radio Network, and we are on the Rational Revolution. I'm so glad you're here. And we're going to go to school here for the next hour, because this is a subject that I find so fascinating and I know freaking nothing about. And I think we have one of the leaders in the United States that can talk about this like not a lot of people can. So with me today, we're going to get right into it. We have Daniel Olson. He's a returning guest. He was on with, the gal who was egg secretary. But we got him on again because there's a lot going on out there. Daniel Olson is the owner of Forage Innovations. He's a seventh generation dairy farmer. Forage Innovations is the largest forage consultation company in the United States. And this is fascinating. One out of every 11 cows in the United States is under your care.
Directly or indirectly.
Yeah.
We work with
pretty cool.
A lot of cows. That's about 900 and plus thousand cows.
The city of Milwaukee.
Yeah, something like that.
Well, welcome, dude. I'm really glad you're here.
It's good to be here.
Honestly, one of my favorite follows on social media, because like it's such, you know, cool stuff, like making a pizza over the fire or posting where your travels and all that. It's so cool. So I enjoy that a lot.
Okay.
So what I want to talk about is there's a lot of uncertainty in agriculture.
There really is.
And I want to educate the listeners on what's going on. You know, you see all this stuff about how farms are being impacted by ice and by all this. So what's happening right now?
Yeah,
where do we start?
Okay. Yeah, where do we start? Yeah, I mean, farmers are used to uncertainty, right? Like, sure. That's part of the game. Like, in between whether it's markets, whether it's weather, whether it's, they're used to adapting, they're used to a lot of variability. And so that part of the job is not unique. Now, what's happening today, a lot of that is kind of an unforced error, right? Like, so that's an additional stress level, things that they probably shouldn't have to be having to deal with right now. Prices are really low, and a lot of that is kind of hit the media in the last few weeks or a month. There's been some really good articles written. And that's nothing new. Like, we've had low prices in the past. Prices for whether it's dairy or grain, that's at a sub-profitable price. And honestly, we had a low prices, especially for like grain, even last year when we had a different presidential administration. What's changed largely is that that our low prices have been accentuated, they've been extended because of trade policy. And in a normal situation, when the prices of what you're selling go down, a lot of times demand for those things go down, like fertilizer or seed, and the price of that comes down as well.
Okay.
And that has not happened. That has not happened. And so profit margins, well, they're non-existent.
Well, so now, and I last time around with the former president, I was going to ask you, did they face some of these things under the previous administration as well?
Yeah, you know, and that's kind of interesting. So if we think back to the first Trump administration, and a lot of people have kind of short memories, and you know, that seems uh-huh. like a long time ago. And the administration started out very similarly, where there was a lot of trade wars started, maybe not as broad or as deep. And I think there can be a nuanced discussion about tariffs and their usefulness, their place in negotiations or protecting certain sectors. But almost yeah. without fail, tariffs are bad for agriculture.
Oh, really?
Because what we do largely, it's one of the main sectors that we export. And our prices are so directly tied to the amount of international sales that any time there's any sort of retaliatory tariffs or trade agreements that go wrong or people that just don't like us, it negatively affects dairy. And it did that in the first Trump administration for the first few years. And then, of course, COVID hit and everything fell apart. Now, a lot of farmers had maybe a more positive view of that because there was so much money that poured in after or during COVID, because stimulus money, that farmers actually came out of that time period in a pretty good shape. But it wasn't because of the markets. The markets were pretty awful the whole time. And I'm not sure why, but the Biden administration really didn't back off on they kept a lot of those same tariffs that were in right. place through the Trump administration. And I would say that's a bad thing. I'm pretty much a free market.
Yeah.
But we had some really good years during the Biden administration. Dairy spiked up, whether that was an organic natural thing or if that was something that the administration did. I don't know, but we had some really good years. Going into 2024 was a pretty tough year. Definitely things were on the downturn. But normally, like I said, at this point, we would have thought that that we would have rebounded. And that just hasn't happened.
Why do you think the tariffs hurt the dairy industry more so than, you know, a farmer that just does like cash crops or something?
Well, tariffs by themselves, I don't know if they have yet. Actually, they've affected grain farmers quicker than they did dairy. So, okay. So people who like soybeans, where almost half of our soybeans are exported, nearly twice or half of them. And our largest purchaser of them historically has been China. Now they've been trying to get out of trade on soybeans with the U.S. for years. But, you know, we picked fights with Japan, which buys a whole bunch of them, and a lot of other good customers. And so the grain farmers were affected directly and early. Now, dairy is certainly being affected as well. Dairy operations are a little more complex. And so we're being affected by, like, raising prices. So we might buy, I have one of my clients in New York that buys their bedding. They use sawdust shavings for bedding on their dairy cattle, and they buy them from across the border that's 20 minutes away in Canada. And all of a sudden, like overnight, the cost for their bedding goes up by 25 or 50%.
That's hard.
Yeah, it is.
That's really hard.
So there's an excess of dairy or an abundance of dairy products in the world right now. There's a lot of countries that are doing a really good job of producing milk. But in the United States, we're just exceptional at it. we're extremely efficient. We can grow and produce dairy products for a lower price point than really anywhere else in the world. Even with lower labor prices in Mexico or China or whatever, they can still buy it from us at a lower price point than they can afford to grow it.
Wow.
Now, and we can even make money at that price. Now, that's with all things being equal, but right now they're not. Because of retaliatory tariffs, there's 20, 25, whatever the it's changing all the time. But
yeah, you can't keep up.
Can't keep up, right? But that certainly has a negative impact on our profitability because it artificially lowers the price for what we can get for our products.
So put into perspective how a mom and pop, you know, seventh generation dairy is impacted by global trade relationships.
Yeah, so tariffs get you two different ways. One, so if you have a pound of cheese and you want to sell that pound of cheese to China, and that pound of cheese is worth $2 a pound in Chicago at the exchange. Well, if China tacks a 20% tariff on that, all of a sudden our cheese becomes worth $1.60 a pound. They'll still buy it, but they'll only pay $1.60. And so it has, and maybe they'll eat some of it, maybe not, but on the global, but if they want to buy that from us, they have to pay a tariff to their government. And that's the way tariffs work. So maybe they can go to another country and buy it for $1.85. And all of a sudden, like it's cheaper for them. Now, so it lowers the price that we get for our products. Right now, about 20% of the dairy products are exported that we produce every day in this country. But that's enough to totally refix the price point in the for the products that we get. Like, there's a lot of people that say, well, just cut production. Well, we would have to cut production by like at least 20%.
Oh, my God.
Before it would start truly impacting the price that we get for our products.
And would that affect the price not only just of what we sell and export? That would cut the price or hurt the price of what we're buying at the grocery store.
Yeah, so it would change. It would make things maybe more expensive domestically, but it also changes the price of what we're getting for our products. So there's that aspect of it, that it lowers the value of everything that we're producing. But it also raises the cost of the things that we need to buy to stay in business. So the things that we buy are our machinery. And because of tariffs, both on production stuff out of and steel tariffs that go into place, all the parts that we buy get more expensive. A fertilizer that we're importing, a lot of that we don't even have domestically, so we have to import it. Mm-hmm. It's getting more expensive.
I'm a business owner too, and the top line number, if that goes down all the while, the bottom line number, the costs are coming back up. You know, you really have not a lot of room to play with in the middle.
No, and you know, and for the most part, agriculture works on really small profit margins to start with.
Yeah, it's interesting. In my business, I was helping a gentleman purchase a car right before I got here, and he's a dairy farmer too. And you know, he gave me the big number of what his farm runs off of, and he's like, I make about 20 grand a year. And it's like, what? You know, and it's crazy. There's not a lot of meat left on the bone there. No. And if you're getting it from both ends, that's hard. So in, 30 seconds or less on those tariffs, ultimately who's paying that?
Yeah. So, there's two stories. Like, one, it's like, okay, if you're buying a product that's tariffed, you're of course paying that as a consumer. But what it does is you know, these retaliatory tariffs is what we're dealing with. And that's the real problem right now, that it's lowering the value of everything we have by maybe 20%.
Jeez. We're talking with Daniel Olson. He's a farm consultant here on the Rational Revolution. We're going to continue this discussion right after this. Stick around.
WMDX, where thinking is still fashionable.
Streaming TV is where it's at. It's not about cutting the cord anymore. It's all about your customized TV options. With the best and cheapest high-speed internet and your own TV subscriptions, we've got your dream TV lineup. Between wired and satellite internet and TV, save money and get more internet speed and better TV today by calling the Whole Home Connect.
800-217-9129. 800-217-9129. 800-217-9129.
My part-time service in the Army National Guard makes it possible for me to be more for the community I call home. My training helps me at work when I lead by example. The Army National Guard has taught me the value of showing respect to those I come in contact with each day. My service also allows me to be there for my community in ways others can't. I help my hometown recover after nature strikes. My service in the Army National Guard allows me to keep my country and those I care about safe from threats. I also work with a network of professionals that help me succeed and accomplish the mission. Plus, the Army National Guard education benefits make getting a higher education a reality. Being an Army National Guard soldier makes living and serving in my community more rewarding every day. Learn how you too can live and serve part-time, close to home by visiting NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard, aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
The Elder Care Locator is here to help you live your best life as you age at home. Our call center advisors are ready to connect you with trustworthy local experts. Help is just a phone call away at 1-800-677-1116.
As Wisconsin as a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Hey, welcome back. What have you done with it? You're listening to The Rational Revolution. I'm Mark Becker. We've got my friend Daniel Olson. He's the owner of Forage Innovations, largest forage consultation company in the United States. What is forage?
Yeah, forage is what we feed the cows. So it's everything that isn't grain.
Okay.
So when we think of haylage, like alfalfa, or grasses, or corn silage, it's that part, which makes up maybe 60% of everything that a cow eats in a day.
It was fascinating. Daniel posted a picture the other day about, how many kernels are on a corn cob or whatever, yeah. What was healthy. And I had a really stupid question because I saw there was a tractor that was like chewing up the entire stalk of corn, leaves and all, kernel. And I was like, oh my God, what are they doing? How are they? And I asked the very, very stupid question. And you had some wonderfully kind people who could have said, you're a moron. But they were so nice and were like, nope, that's what they eat, the whole thing.
Yep.
Holy cow. Yep. I didn't even know that.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. A good crop of corn can grow about 30 tons an acre of,
oh my God,
of what we call corn silage. And that would be, it chops up the whole plant.
And you got to do it when it's green?
Yeah. So we wait till the grain is getting about ripe, but the plant is green yet. So you have sugars and moisture and it ferments.
So the like alcohol?
Not really. There's not really an alcohol content because of the pH and stuff, but But yeah, if you had alcohol, you'd have a problem in your fermentation.
Oh, yeah. Moonshine. You're feeding the cows.
So back in the day, you remember these, you've seen these like upright silos.
Yeah.
The concrete silos. Okay. We had those on our farm, and we don't use them anymore. But there would be this like juice that would run out of the silo, and it would kind of pool at the bottom after. And that would get an alcohol content. And the reason we found out is because the raccoons would come in there and they would like
drink
it at night and get drunk on the stuff.
Yeah. It's the bar. They're going to the Olsen pub.
Yep.
So, so many places don't have those upright.
No.
Why not?
They just don't have the capacity. There takes too long to get stuff in, takes too long to get them out. And as farms have grown, there's just not enough capacity.
They're dangerous too.
They can be. They can be.
So what is, you're here, so I got a bunch of dumb questions. The farm, we have a farm behind us, and the stalks are still there, and it's brown. So what would they use that for?
They'll probably be combining the grain. So they'll just come in with a combine, which just takes the grain off of the cobs.
Okay.
And so that'll just be the cob, or just the grain portion, not the whole plant.
This is just fascinating stuff. So anyway, we're talking about how farmers are doing it and the economic impact and all of that. We were talking on the other side about tariffs and all of, how that's impacting the global market. What is it doing to the price of cheese and milk at the grocery store?
Well, you're starting to see it come down. There's been some deals. I saw Festival had butter for $1.79 a pound.
Wow.
Of course, that's probably a little bit of a loss leader, but that's really about what the wholesale price is for butter right now. And cheese is what, $1.60 or something in Chicago right now on, if you want to buy a train car load.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sweet.
It keeps getting cheaper. I might, do that. So there are some, everybody buys a vehicle and gets like a 40 pound block of cheese from you, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Prices are, we're starting to see that on the retail side, but too often consumers don't fully feel the downturn in that. Like, and I'm not sure exactly why, partially because there's just a lot of fixed cost in retail. You got the store, you got the transportation, you got the processing, the actual product makes up a percentage of that. But when that comes down, the consumer doesn't fully feel the benefits of that. But the farmer who produces it on a wholesale commodity certainly does.
So really the people that will feel the impact of that is the farms themselves.
Yeah. And the people who are involved in the egg community, I'm on both sides. I have a company that certainly benefits from working with farmers, but then we also milk cows ourselves.
Right.
And we have my family's involved in a couple different dairy farms. And so, yeah, we feel it on both sides.
What countries are coming in to fill that gap?
On the dairy side. Yeah. So Australia and New Zealand have always produced dairy, especially to Asian countries. They had a great relationship with China. The EU is actually up on dairy products, maybe 3% year on year. And that has not happened for a while. And then, of course, there's South America. There's other countries that have the ability to do it. And what we're doing is basically artificially raising their price because of the retaliatory tariffs on us.
That's crazy. I mean, it's interesting how, you look at this policy and I'm editorializing here, but you look at the policies of these tariffs and how, it's portrayed in the media and in his head as these are wonderful and beautiful and all these things are so great. Mm-hmm. But all we're doing is repeatedly shooting ourselves in the foot and letting everybody else that does the same darn thing come in and have a leg up in the competition.
Yeah, if everything was if everything was equal and we didn't export anything, we didn't import anything, it would be different. But it's just not the reality of where we are.
Right. We're talking with Daniel Olson, a dairy consultant here on the Rational Revolution. We're going to talk on the other side of the break about labor and what's going on with that as well. Stick around here on the Rational Revolution. I am Mark Becker.
WMDX. Because silence makes you nervous. Madison, Wisconsin. Students, government, lakes, and 92.7 WMDX.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. This march in Washington today, part of a nationwide No Kings protests, another one in Times Square, New York, ABC's Andrew Dimbert.
And this goes for blocks and blocks and blocks, seas of people. As for the protest itself, we have seen that it is peaceful. Demonstrators have stopped here and there to give speeches, chant, that sort of thing, but it has been rather disruptive, but peaceful.
On day 18 of the government shutdown, businesses in the nation's capital are hurting. Khalid Pitts co-owns Cork Wine Bar and Market.
That's less people in the seats in my restaurant and less people in the streets of Washington, D.C. going out.
Evacuation in southwest Alaska after a hurricane-force storm washed away towns. Not long after, the Palestinian embassy in Egypt today announced that the Rafah crossing between Gaza and Egypt will reopen Monday so Gazans can return home. Israeli Prime Minister's office says it will not be opened. This is ABC News.
The Brewers' season comes to an end. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports, baseball. The Brewers were once again dominated by the Dodgers in Los Angeles. The Dodgers winning 5-1 to complete a four-game sweep of Milwaukee. The Brewers going from the best record in baseball to runners-up in the postseason again. Manager Pat Murphy.
We've talked about being an inch from the top and an inch from the bottom. And we faced a really, really talented team that played really, really good.
The Dodgers starting pitcher, Shohei Ohtani, named the series MVP after pitching six scoreless innings, striking out 10 batters, and hitting three home runs in the game, one that left the ballpark.
There's a reason why he's the greatest player on the planet. You know, what he did on the mound, what he did at the bat, he created a lot of memories for a lot of people. And so for us to do it in a game-clinching game at home, wins the NLCS MVP, pretty special, and I'm just happy to be able to go along for the ride.
That's Dodgers manager Dave Roberts. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. If you're looking for a more efficient way to watch TV, this might be a deal for you. You can now bundle Apple TV with Peacock. Apple TV is already ad-free, but if you pair it with Peacock Premium Plus, which is Peacock's version of ad-free, it will cost you $19.99 a month. That's barely a savings from current prices, but if you go with the ad-supported Peacock, you can get both platforms for $14.99. Apple TV right now is currently $12.99, so that's not a bad deal, if you don't mind a few ads. It was pretty much a given Taylor Swift's new album, The Life of a Showgirl, was going to break records. According to Variety, Showgirl sold 4 million units in its first week. The old record was 3.5 million units for a week, which was previously held by Adele, according to Billboard. Swift also set a record, now having the most number one solo albums, breaking a tie she held with Jay-Z and Drake. She trails only the Beatles, who hold the record for all artists with 19 number one albums. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Catch Farm Report updates throughout the day from the Midwest Farm Report, right here on 92.7 WMDX.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, sunshine and highs in the low to mid-70s. Rain is likely tonight, a low around 46. Sunday, windy with a high around 59. Northwest winds gust to 30 miles per hour. On Monday, partly sunny and a high around 66.
Right now, 71 degrees.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
Don't often agree with Marjorie Taylor Greene. They asked her about Congress being shut down and how it related to the Epstein files.
Why drag this out? That is going to have 218 signatures. I say go ahead and do it and get it over with.
Trick me? She's not necessarily my cup of tea, but she reads tea leaves. I think her moving to where she's at says that when that vote happens, there are going to be a major dam break, and it's a problem.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station, and on the app.
As veterans, we're no strangers to helping others.
That's what we were taught, service before self.
But we do have one question for the veterans listening.
When is the last time you reached out for help?
If you or someone you know needs resources, whether it's for stress, finances, employment, or mental health, don't wait. Reach out.
Find more information at va.gov/reach. That's va.gov/reach.
Brought to you by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs and the Ad Council.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Amy Gaither, director of a new show at the Festival Theater in St. Croix Falls. Then Eric and Adam from Ask Your Mother drop by to rock the studio. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Song. Oh yeah. This is the Rational Revolution. Sorry, I get caught up in the music sometimes. I'm Mark Becker. We got my dear friend Daniel Olson. He's owner of Forge Innovations, largest forge consultant company in the United States, specializing in dairy farms. And we're talking about some of these policies that are really hurting dairy farms specifically. And if you want to, if you like this discussion, don't forget, like our show on the social media. We're everywhere. You can listen to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts, civicmedia.us, all the stuff. Find us. Now I got to rip the Band-Aid off. Things that are going, on in the news. Huge stuff about ICE and immigration and all of that. And today we really focused not on the political, but just the facts and how have those raids and the ICE direction, how have that impacted farms?
So my clientele, I tend to be what you consider larger dairy farms. Yeah. I work with some of the largest dairy farms in the country. And of course, they're probably affected more than a farm that produces maybe all their own labor. And farmers aren't unified on this. Like there's the
farmer, really?
I mean, there's the small farmers that look at their neighbor who's larger, milks more cows, whatever, and they think, well, if it wasn't for immigrant labor, I would be making more money. Like I wouldn't have to compete with land for my neighbor, et cetera. Yeah. And some of that may be true. But like I said, we're in such an export heavy market now that unless you want the whole dairy industry to collapse, I just don't think that's really a thing. But I think the story about immigrant labor and its affecting is a very human one. Like, people like to they like to separate out, well, it's just workers and they're just, they're just cycling through. And these dairy farmers have very real relationships with their workers. Some of these have been there their whole lives. You know, they came when their parents came and they were 4 years old and they've been hanging around the farm and they're working there.
And they're creating a dignified life for themselves.
They are. And this idea that it's slave labor, that they're being abused, that's just not true.
Right.
Like, and I think there's probably been some of that has happened in the past, especially in maybe seasonal labor, like in vegetables or fruit industry, where people had substandard housing. It's just not true in dairy farms.
Yeah. So in those dairy farms that are bigger, and I can attest to this because we work in the car business and we work in helping people secure financing, and we have had immigrants come in and they tell us what they make and it's they're not making $10 an hour.
No, they aren't. No, and so when they lose labor, so one of my farms and I had posted something on Facebook and I've worked with this dairy for a long time and they're really good people. And they had an audit and they found that 37 of their employees were not valid. Now, these weren't people that came across the desert somewhere and snuck under a fence. These were people that came, maybe they overstayed a work visa, maybe something changed in an asylum claim. Mm-hmm. Like maybe there was just some policy change or a paperwork change. But a lot of these people have been with them for years. And I was just out there this week visiting with them, and they said, yeah, we found the people. We filled the positions.
So they left. They were taken away.
They lost 37 of their employees, which was over half of their workforce.
Oh, my God.
But they said what we can't replace, is the relationships. We can't replace the experience. They have animal health issues that are cropping up because they have people that, yeah, they can put a milker on a cow, but they can't tell if she's sick or not. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't have the skills that these people that have made an occupation and a life out of working with dairy cattle do. And so this idea that we can just replace them or just go into town and find people or pay more. You can't replace skills like that quickly.
No. And so, and the thing to branch out a little bit, the frustrating thing is you hear what's being said of we're going to get the bad guys. We're going to the people that are here and taking your jobs and stealing things. And that's not really what's necessarily happening.
Yeah, and that's the hard part, right? Like I think most rational people are.
That's what the show's about.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I think we've talked about this. Like most people, if you commit a felony, like, hey, that's a problem. Like we don't probably want you here, you know?
Right.
Okay. And I think most people can get around that. And when you talk about the cracking down on gangs or whatever, mm-hmm. like, hey, I think we can get, you know, I think the vast majority of the country is like, but when you're going to people's places of employment, arresting people who are paying taxes, mm-hmm. I mean, the employer pays them out of their, you know,
yeah.
they're paying taxes.
Yes.
They're supporting U.S. businesses. They're contributing members of society. They're not committing crimes other than their immigration status. Like, I don't think that's what most people signed up for, especially in agriculture. And I've had a number of these farms who I know have supported the administration and might still for various reasons, but they've just really expressed frustration because they said, well, this isn't what they said was going to happen.
Right.
And even as recently as a month.
What the hell did you think was going to happen?
Well, okay.
I can't say that, but you know.
Yeah, but even but even the president has put out some messaging like, hey, we know we need these people on farms or we know we need them in the service industry.
Right.
But then the next day, a spokesman will come out and say, well, hey, we're arrested. We're getting rid of them anyway.
Right.
Now, so there's just this kind of confusion.
They've talked about bailouts. Was it $20 billion? Or is it $10 billion? But they gave $20 billion to Argentina.
Yeah, I think that's up to 40 now.
That was cheap, is it really?
That's what I heard.
Oh, my God. Okay. I won't editorialize that, but is that, that's...
The bailout thing?
How much is that going to help?
Not enough. Not enough. So, for context, remember I said that, just as a rough figure, say that tariffs have dropped our price for our products by 20%. You know, if there's a 20% tariff on us from another country, it roughly. So soybeans right now are roughly $9 a bushel. And they should be 11, 12. That's what the South American price is right now, is about $12. So it's just the tariff built right into it.
That's huge.
We grow about $4.5 billion bushels of soybeans a year. So $2.50 a bushel times 4 billion is 10 billion. So what that bailout could do is it could bring our soybean price up to the price of what the international market is. But that doesn't change it's not the dairy, it's not the corn, it's not the rice, all the other agriculture products. So yeah, it's something. And I'm sure no farmers are going to turn it down.
Oh, no.
But in reality, we're talking like maybe $100 billion in negative impact, economic impact from the tariffs and trade policy.
And it's completely self-induced.
It is. Yeah. Now, I mean, you could say maybe there's some sectors of the economy that have benefited. And I don't know enough about those sectors to say, like, hey, if I was in the steel business, did it help me or hurt me? You know, if I'm in the cabinet business or whatever, maybe there's some that element. I don't know. But I'm just speaking from an agriculture perspective. It always hurts.
Oh, yeah. And we're talking with Daniel Olson, owner of Forge Innovations. With the farms that you consult on, how is the mood the same when you walk onto the farms, when you go do your visits? Is it, what is that like?
Yeah. And there's really, as a whole, I think there's just kind of this uncertainty out there. Like there's still those that have quite a bit of confidence in the administration that if we hold out long enough, they're going to fix it.
What's the goal at the end?
Well, that's what I'm a little frustrated by. I felt like in the first administration, it was like, well, we're going to fix NAFTA.
Right.
We're going to fix this. And this time around, it feels more like this just is the policy. Like, we're going to try to generate revenue from tariffs. Like, tariffs aren't a negotiating tool to get a better trade deal. It's some, that is the goal, is to get as big a tariffs as we can. And so I think it's just it's a way to raise revenue for the federal government without raising taxes. I mean, that is what it is. And so, so I think some of this is misguided. Like, I don't know that there's a real goal at the end. I think we're kind of there. And that's a problem.
That's not great.
That's not great.
Yeah.
It's not great.
Well, because, you know, you think if this is... Yeah, you're exactly right. Last time it was, hey, you know, the trade deals, they're not equal, and he was right. I mean, he was right about that, and so you use the tariffs as this is our negotiating tool to get to that place, and I think that's the difference between the two, is, well, that's why countries are now buying their soybeans from a different place, because they don't know what's going on.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, we're American citizens and we don't know what's happening from day to day, right? And if you're another country, because we're farmers, we are selling products to the world. Those are our customers. And probably the biggest thing that concerns me is the long-term relationships that are maybe damaged because of our policies. And I don't know, like, if you can just flip a switch and fix that.
That was my question is, if what's happening during these tariffs is China is finding other places to get their stuff, okay, then what?
Yeah. So these other countries built infrastructure.
Right.
They made improvements. They ramped up production. They're sitting in a much better position now to produce that and fill that goal. So that is the risk. And coming back to this, like, if I sell something, like if I buy a car from you and you have a really, maybe we'll cover it on the back side, but if you have a really unique product, you have a car that nobody else has, like, you might treat me like dirt and I might still buy that car from you, but it'll be the last one I buy from you. Right. Okay.
Wow.
And that's a little bit the way it feels right now. Like, people still might have to work with us, but do they want to?
Right.
Are they going to want to long term?
Right. Awesome. Daniel Olson, thank you so much. This was awesome. I appreciate the conversation, and God, we're pulling for those farmers, man. We're here on the Rational Revolution. My thoughts coming up after this.
Engage, grow with Civic Media. Log on civicmedia.us/advertise.
Football season is heating up on Prize Picks. Now, you and I make decisions every day, but on Prize Picks, being right can get you paid. So keep the season rolling by getting $50 instantly in lineups when you play your first $5. Plus, the app for Prize Picks is really simple to use. Just pick two or more players across any sport, pick more or less in their projections, and if you're right, you could win big. Prize Picks is also available in 40-plus states, including California, Texas, Florida, and Georgia. Most importantly, they don't play about your money. All transactions on the app are fast, safe, and secure. Don't miss any of the action this season with Prize Picks, where it's good to be right. Download the Prize Picks app today, use code SUNDAY, and get $50 instantly in lineups when you play $5. That's code SUNDAY on Prize Picks to get $50 instantly in lineups when you play $5. Win or lose, you'll get $50 in lineups just for playing, guaranteed. Prize Picks, it's good to be right. Must be present in certain states. Visit prizepicks.com for restrictions and details.
Seems like nobody in America agrees on much of anything these days.
But can we agree the federal government shouldn't tax people into poverty?
If you work full-time, you should be able to afford your basic needs. Don't you think? We're the Patriotic Millionaires.
We believe your full-time job should cover what it costs to live. We think your first $45,000 of income should be tax-free.
And multimillionaires?
We should pay more to fund your tax cut. Go to first45taxfree.com to learn more. A working-class tax cut paid for by millionaires. That's an idea we can all agree on.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
It should not be a partisan question as to how the National Guard is being deployed. That should be extremely concerning to Republicans of good faith right alongside Democrats. If you scrub it of the partisanship, the facts are not disputable. You have flouting of court orders and a political use of the National Guard, two things which no American should ever be okay with.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons from 4 until 6. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Conrad has restless leg syndrome where it's hard to control your leg. And you got to be careful. There's a lot of expensive stuff around this studio. So, what broke over there just now?
A couple speakers.
They just redid the studio. We'll be dealing with,
sorry.
This is a serious thing. All right, what are we going to do here?
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
When it comes to vaping, the truth can get clouded. So let's make it clear. Vaping is not safe for youth.
Because vaping can put microscopic particles into your lungs.
And dangerous things like metals into your body.
And nicotine, which can harm a person's brain development through their mid-20s.
With appealing flavors, high nicotine levels, and lots of promotion on social media.
Many kids think vaping is harmless, but it's not.
So talk to your kids about the risks of vaping.
Because when you talk, they hear you.
Learn more at underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Another word for nothing left to lose. Nothing. I mean nothing, honey, if it ain't free. And feeling good was easy love when he sang.
Ode to Senator Chris Dassler Alfheim. I love you. I hope you're doing well. We miss you. She just had an anniversary, her and her wife did. So congratulations. So that's shout out. Hey, so that was Daniel Olson. He's a brilliant man. And one out of every 11 cows, dairy cows in this country is under his care. That is a fascinating statistic. It's not great. he said just as he was leaving that he didn't get a chance to say it, but he went to a small 200 cow dairy farm, and it was his biggest most tenured worker and his son was picked up by ICE, and they were arrested and taken away. And Daniel went to the farm this past week, and he saw, you know, he did a visit, and the farmer and his wife just looked beat. And so his point was, this is not just the big farms that are being impacted by this. It's everybody. It's the big CAFOs that everybody loves to hate. And it's also the mom and pop farm, the family farm that's been in family for generations. And so it's not great. And I appreciate Daniel's ability to not talk about the politics of it. It's just what it is. These policies are really, really hurting farmers terribly, period. Doesn't matter if it's a Democrat, doesn't matter if it's Republican. What's happening right now is not good for our farmers. And it's happening, here's a political stuff, it's happening from a group of people who said, oh, we love farmers. They're the backbone of our party. BS. If they were that, you wouldn't be doing this. So this past week, we had a couple different events. This is the dueling events. We had events in I think there was one in Northeast Wisconsin and some all over the country to celebrate what would have been Charlie Kirk, what should have been Charlie Kirk's 32nd birthday party or birthday. And we also have the No Kings rally. Millions of people from across the country are going to be going out. And it's been shared on civic media, socials, and the website and all of that. We shared it. I really hope you got a chance to get out there. And I want to talk about that, next week. But they're also back to the Charlie Kirk thing. It was interesting. I knew it was happening. I really didn't pay much attention to it. But then I saw an article and it was quoted. And this is, if you want a good follow, here's a good follow. It's the Greater Green Bay Society of the Llama. Oh my God. It is just it's a fun little group to be part of. And a shout out to Jason Jerry. He's just a magician with that darn thing. I get a lot of news and stuff from that group. And one of it was how at the event, which one of the participants on the llama said, there was 1,000 people there. And then you read the article and it was like, a couple hundred. And Republicans and their crowd sizes, that's their thing. You know, they got an issue with that. But one of the things that was said was a dear governor, old retired governor Tommy Thompson, said he compared Charlie Kirk to John the Baptist. And I read the context and I read it and I was like, dude, oh my God. So me being who I am, I sent a text to to the governor. And it was a pretty snarky text, and I didn't know if he was going to respond back. And I love Tommy Thompson. He's a good and decent person. And to my surprise, he called me. I was rocking my daughter to sleep, and then when the governor calls, it's like, oh God, you pick up. And I did. And so we started talking, and he's like, Mark, when you get in front of a crowd, you get going, you kind of get in the heat of it, and you're in your speech, and you just say stuff, and they're both evangelists, right? And I think he was kind of looking for some validation there. And I was like, Governor, I don't think, to be fair, that John the Baptist would be the guy that would question a black pilot's credentials. And there was a little pregnant pause, and and I said, you're Catholic, Tommy. And he goes, yeah, that's probably not the best choice of words. Like, no, it was not. But then we talked a little bit about some of the other things I've seen. Because I said, Tommy, I hear that you're thinking about running. You're kicking it around. And he said, but it's not that really. It's not, I'm kicking it around. What that was really talking about how we don't have someone that can win. And he said, if you're a Republican and you want to win in that race in that time, you have to win more of Dane County and more of Milwaukee County than what a Republican that we have in the field can. And I said, yeah, take it from, a guy that's won both of those counties. Tommy did. And he said, Tom Tiffany is not that guy. He will not win that race because he cannot get the people out of Dane County and Milwaukee County that he needs. I was like, oh boy, hot take. I mentioned Eric Hovde's name and we got a good kick out of that. But then I kind of talked about how, expressed frustration about where the Republican Party is. And I said, look at your friend Rob Coles, what he did on the show, former senator. And Tommy said, it took a lot of guts to do that. And I'm like, then why the hell aren't you saying anything? You know this stuff is wrong. You know the direction of the party is not a good direction to be at. And you realize that getting more and more extreme is not what we should be doing. I'm not there anymore. And so we said, well, where are you? I left because y'all suck. So it was good to talk to him. And I have the utmost amount of respect for him. And he loves the Republican Party and he wants to be the guy to bring people together. But the darndest thing is we all know, the royal we, everyone on that phone call knew, But the way to bring people together is you have to get past all of the stuff that Trumpism is about. That's how you do it. Now, I don't want to be part of that because you burned it to the ground. And God bless Tommy, he still does. So there's some stuff right there. We'll see you next week on the Rational Revolution on the Civic Media Radio Network. I love you guys. I'm Mark Becker. See ya.
This is 92.7 WMDX Columbus, Madison's home for real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. This march in Washington today, part of nationwide No Kings protests in D.C., ABC's Christiane Cordero.
We're seeing a lot more costumes. We're seeing a lot more of the color yellow, which organizers describe as their choice of color to reflect a sense of optimism, but in their fight against what they call an assault on democracy.
In Times Square in New York, ABC's Andrew Dimbert.
NYPD have been out in force. They're keeping their distance as well, making sure that their presence isn't overbearing to the protesters. They've closed down some of the streets as some of these protesters make their way downtown.
A leader of a labor union in Southern California who was arrested while protesting an immigration raid earlier this year will have his felony obstruction charge reduced to a misdemeanor, according to court records. Iranian-backed Houthi rebels today raided a U.N. facility in Yemen's capital Sana'a, says a U.N. official who adds that all staff are reported to be safe. This is ABC News. Welcome, news.